Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, March 26, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Well, this evening, we are presenting Astrology 102. We had such a great response to the Astrology 101 show we did on February 12th that we're continuing with this series. It's so important that starseeds understand planetary energies to navigate their missions and time their important activities. It's also a great tool for understanding others, your relationships with them, and your own inner workings. We have a sample chart to use as a visual aid on our website, so if you could open up a new browser tab and go to starseedhotline.com/headline news and scroll down to the February 12th sample chart. And if you haven't heard Astrology 101, it would be a good idea to listen to that to hear what you missed in the first lesson. Lavendar and I will be answering general astrology questions, but we won't be able to run your chart during the show. Have a pen and paper ready because we'll be giving a phone number and a reference book title to help you with your astrological tracking. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseed. We'd like to thank Chris and Fiona for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292, and remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. Please remember to click follow on our show page if you like our show. And if you're new to our show, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge, and the entire site has been coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd like to thank Rose, Chris, Anastasia, and Tammy for their great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. And we'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions with Tammy are also available. And if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And please allow at least 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure that you do get it in time. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Hello, ladies. Well, Lavendar, there you are. Hello, Lavendar.
Yeah, hello. I'm here. Anastasia, are you there?
Yes, I finally fixed the mute button. Good evening, everybody.
Good. Well, I'm anxious to hear what news you have for us this evening.
Well, I've got some news for everyone. I just want to say it's great to be with all of you tonight. It's always one of my favorite things to do. And I want to wish a good week to all the Starseed out there listening. And so we'll get into the news tonight by talking what we normally talk about to start off, and that's the sun. I mentioned last week that everyone is surprised that the sun is very quiet, and now it's very, very quiet. It's just gone just as still as can be. They put the odds of a significant solar eruption at no more than 1%. It has everybody scratching their heads, but very, very quiet, which may be or may not be connected to the kind of weather which we've been having, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later. We're having snow here where I am today, and today is March 26th. Very unusual. It's been really, really cold and didn't have much of a winter, but our springtime is more winter-like than spring.
Yeah.
And I also want to mention that there's a daylight alignment of the planets Venus, Mars, and Uranus, And that's they're gathering together for a remarkable alignment that is going to be seen during the daylight. It's just within a few degrees of the bright sun, so we can't see it, but it is happening. And, of course, tonight's subject is very important, and I just wanted to bring that up. That's a pretty cool thing. And, you know, we're always talking about fireballs because fireballs are always happening. And recently, on the 22nd, just a few days ago, apparently thousands of people witnessed a multicolored fireball fragment explode over the northeastern United States. They saw it from 14 states all over, and they say it was the eighth fireball that passed over the northeast of the country in the last month. Now, as far as people making reports, many thousands of people witnessed it, but formal reports have counted up to about 350 people who bothered to fill out the paperwork for that. But they're saying it was a major meteor event. Actually, it was big enough and bright enough to be classified as a fireball, and it lit up the night sky over the whole eastern North America. They say they saw it in 13 states, Washington, D.C., two Canadian provinces, and other states as well. So that was a big event, and I'll bet some of our starseed out there may have seen that. Also, there was a bright blue fireball reported over the eastern seaboard again on the 19th of March, and that included a loud boom. And there was a loud boom, and a flash of light that was reported in Smithtown, New York, on a separate day, just a day previous to that. And nobody knows what caused that. And then on the 17th of March, there were two separate fireballs that blazed over Canada. So it's just happening everywhere, but for some particular reason, if no reason, I don't know, the eastern seaboard is getting a lot of these. So keep your eyes on the sky, and even if you're in your house and you see a bright flash through the window, you may consider that might be what it is, because a lot of people are experiencing this right now. And we've had quite a bit of earthquake activity as usual, but it really has been scattered along the Ring of Fire. There was a magnitude 5.5 earthquake in Tambulatana, Indonesia, which is on the other side of the world, but there was also one in New Zealand, a 5.4, and a 5.9 that struck southern Mexico with a 5.1 aftershock. And that just sent people running into the streets. They had an earthquake alarm, and there was no damage or injuries, but that was a pretty good size quake and a pretty good size aftershock. Could have been worse, but that's bad enough. And there's some volcanic activity happening across the planet, an awful lot of it, actually. But in particular, there have been warnings issued for volcanoes in Peru and Iceland. Now, Icelandic police say that the seismic activity near the Hekla volcano prompted them to declare an uncertainty phase, and so what they're advising people to do is to stay away from the area. And they're concerned because a swarm of earthquakes in that region can be a warning, but not necessarily a guarantee of a pending eruption, but they're concerned about it. So that is what's going on there, and it has been preceded by earthquake activity around that volcano. There was also a 6.2 earthquake in San Jose Peñuela in Guatemala and a 6.0 earthquake in Fiji. So all of that part of the country is, or all the part of the world, excuse me, is very active. And in places that you wouldn't think, in Russia, they had a 6.1 earthquake, all of this within the last week. Now, I want to get back to the weather for a second because, you know, this is a big snowstorm that's blanketed a lot of the United States. Started on Sunday. It swept in from the Midwest, and by Sunday night, the storm covered much of the eastern half of the country from Iowa to the eastern seaboard and as far north and south as Michigan and Tennessee. And, of course, I've had the pleasure of partaking of that. And so it looks like our spring has been delayed, and no early vegetables for this girl. I don't know about you guys where you are, but I'm just kind of hunkered down right now. And, you know, we often worry about tornadoes in the southern part of the country during this time of the year. Of course, we haven't had the right weather for that. And we don't think of tornadoes as occurring in odd places like Australia. But Australia had a tornado that ripped through two of their states and injured injured at least 20 people, and this just happened on Saturday. And also, very odd, a tornado hurt over 500 people in Bangladesh. In Bangladesh, it swept through 25 villages. Isn't that something? We don't think about tornadoes in that part of the part of the world. So Mother Nature is really, she's acting up. And also, we've been talking about sinkholes, and I wanted to tell you this story about Florida. I mentioned briefly about the sinkhole that swallowed the man that was in his bed a couple of weeks ago. Well, a new sinkhole has emerged in that very same town. It's the third sinkhole in Florida in a month. And we're just hearing more and more about these sinkholes. They're happening everywhere. Somebody was just moving to Tombstone, Arizona. This was in actually yesterday's news from KTAR.com. It's a news station there in Tombstone. And this family that was moving to Tombstone pulled into their driveway, and the sinkhole was eating up the house. And so that's a really weird thing. And also, I mentioned in the coverage of this story a week or so ago, I mentioned that large sinkhole in Louisiana. And what we are not aware of is that this sinkhole, by the way, it's in the Assumption Parish, and they're calling it the Great Louisiana Sinkhole. It started last summer, and it suddenly appeared out of nowhere. It's been, there's been quite a bit of coverage on alternative media, but you don't hear anything about it, of course, in mainstream news. But you know that thing has been gaining in size. It's been there for about 7 months, and it is picking up speed. It's reportedly swallowed up an entire acre of land in just one day and 3 acres of land in under a week. And so these are really concerning things about what's happening under the ground to erode the earth like this. And so listen and keep watch for those things, because we're getting a lot more of them. I think it would be great to have an expert on topics like this on our Starseed show and find out really what they have to say about what's going on underneath the ground. Also, this is a bit of a concern. You know, they're always into things, these scientists in their laboratories, and doing things that make us shudder. And what has happened recently is that a vial containing potentially a harmful virus has gone missing from a lab at the University of Texas Medical Branch. Now, this missing vial contains less than a quarter of a teaspoon of an infectious disease, so they say. It had been stored in a locked freezer designed to handle biological material safely, they said. But during a routine inspection, they realized that one vial of a virus called Guanarito, I don't think I said that right, but Guanarito, was not accounted for. It was come up missing. And they're worried because this is an emerging disease that has caused deadly outbreaks in Venezuela. And the government has prioritized it for research because they think that it has a potential use to be used in terrorism. So, you know, they're tinkering with those things. And of course, they're going to keep them safe and research them. But lo and behold, it's come up missing. So we have tremendous challenges at this time in which we live, and it's good to keep our eyes open, our ears to the ground, and pay attention to the sky, and as we're going to talk about tonight, to astrology and to what's going on. All of this is part of the bigger picture coming together now for the shift, and I'm excited to hear what Lavendar and you, Ariel, have to tell us tonight. So that's it for the news this week.
Well, thank you so much, Anastasia.
My pleasure.
Because, you know, you make a good point. A lot of these things you're just not going to hear on the mainstream news.
No, in fact,
we really,
you know,
appreciate your gathering
information
that affects our world.
Well, I really appreciate the chance to do it, and I do think it is important. There's a lot more to cover than we ever have time for, but we try to get the high points of what we can. But there's a lot going on, let me tell you.
Well, very interesting times we live in.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you so much, Anastasia.
You're most welcome, and a happy, beautiful week to all of our Starseed listeners, and lots of love from my end.
Thank you. Yes, yeah, the first week of spring, although you wouldn't really know it, even as far south as Georgia, we're having freeze tonight, so they're going to flowers. right now, before we get started with Astrology 102, we have a couple of callers of our Starseed listeners and members that have just a little bit to share with the radio audience. And the first one we are going to bring on is Karen. And just let me get your button open there, sweetie. Hi, Karen. Welcome. I understand you have something to share about solar return.
Yes, I do, Ariel. Hi. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I had a solar return done last week with Lavendar, and I had written this the day of our speaking, and so I'll just read it to you. The brook is giggling, the fairies are tickling my nose, the birds are saying, wake up, sleepyhead, your solar return is here. The sun is streaming in as I look at the window by my bed. What a glorious day. The rays of the sun look like diamonds floating on the air, covering the ferns outside my bedroom window. The honeysuckle smells heavenly. As I rise out of my fluffy, warm bed, I realize David is already up. I smell his coffee coming from the kitchen. The window is open, so I stick out my head and say good morning to everyone. Tinkling bells are heard across the stream in answer. When I enter the kitchen, I see David drinking his coffee on the porch, and all around him are fairies. They are trying their hardest to get his attention. I wonder again if he can really see them, but then he looks at me and winks. It is a joke between us now, but it took him a long time to realize that I really could see them, besides talk to animals, fairies, and streams, and that they would talk back to me. I'm not sure what happened to have it become real to him, but I remember the day when he said we had to find a place in the woods beside a stream and that it was going to be our job to take care of the area. He just knew where to find it, like he was led there by an invisible hand. He didn't understand it, but he knew he had to be led there. It was love at first sight for both of us. What a beautiful, enchanted place. It didn't take long for the fairies to come calling on us, a little longer for the sprites, but they came too. I don't know how many times I had to tell him not to worry when he woke up and saw me sitting on the ground surrounded by bears. I smile at the memory. We have come a long way, but what an adventure. My abilities were late coming. I guess I just wasn't ready for them until they showed up. But I was told that was the way it was going to happen, all at once, like a dam bursting, and it was too. My favorite saying is, my eyes are opened and I am not afraid. That became my mantra and still is. Who knows what the day will bring to us today? Who or what will need our help? David and I are a team, always have been. Sometimes it didn't feel that way, but not anymore. He is my protector, but I really don't need protecting from anyone or anything. This place knows me, and I know it. We are a team. All of us working together for the common good, the highest good. Always working, showing, reflecting love. What better gift is there for me on this, my solar return? What joy, bliss, wonder is in for all of us today. I can't wait to find out as I walk over to David, who wraps his arms around me and kisses my cheek. And he says, hi, beautiful, happy birthday. David says to me with a big grin on his face, and then my world is surrounded by flowers, fairies, sprites, birds, and animals, all singing happy birthday to me. How could it get any better than this?
Oh, wow. That is very powerful, and this is, you had written this for your solar return
right,
window?
Right, just about an hour before Lavendar and I spoke.
Wow. Well, that is a really good example of how to wield the power that you get for those 10 hours in manifesting everything that you have written about. So I want to thank you so much for sharing that with our audience, Karen.
Thank you.
And solar returns are very important, for everyone, but especially for Starseed. And we are going to be talking a little bit about that during Astrology 102 just briefly. But I want to thank you so much for joining us, Karen, and sharing that with the audience.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So we have one more caller that is, oh, there she is. Her name is Georgia, and she was with us on our Crystal Quest last year, and she has a little announcement that she'd like to make. So, Georgia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Arielle. It's great
Hello.
To hear your voice as usual, mm-hmm. and everyone else. Thank you very much for allowing me to come on the show, and I just wanted to announce that I have started up a group here called the Northwest Starseed Collective, and I live in the Seattle area, so anything up in the Pacific Northwest here, Vancouver, BC isn't far from us, Portland, Oregon, and all the surrounding areas, but Source was tapping me on the shoulder, the universe, ever since I got back from that crystal quest about doing this. And, of course, I had all kinds of other things going on, and it just keeps tapping, and I've learned to pay attention and just show up on time. I usually get my marching orders from outside myself, but I am happy to be organizing this, and I'm already getting interest from it. But I'll give you a couple of sites that you can go to. And one is the Pacific Northwest Starseed Collective, and those are four separate words. Starseed is one word in this. And you can go to meetup.com and just key in Pacific Northwest Starseed Collective, and that will take you to the page. And you can sign up there if you're interested. We'll be organizing a meetup time to meet face-to-face as soon as we get a feel for how many people out there might be interested so that we can pick a space that will accommodate that. And I've also opened up a new email account called Pacific Northwest Starseeds at yahoo.com, all lowercase. And that will be for anyone who has questions regarding this at all. Just give me your email address, and I'll be more than happy to keep you updated as soon as something comes forward. I may end up creating a forum or a web page or something like that where people can collectively talk back and forth when they're not face-to-face. So I just wanted to let everybody know that in case there's any listeners out in this area, I wanted them to know that that was available. We all know what it's like to be out there holding information that the general public often doesn't know, and it can be kind of like being lonely in a crowd. So I thought that there was a lot of benefit to having a group like this.
Well, that sounds great. And any is this for just for support, for social, for anything?
I put on there for sharing information, possibly connections in a way that relate to our missions, where you might meet somebody you wish to collectively work with, all of that, and just to talk and share information. So, you know, there's a lot of people teaming up. I know several star seeds around here right now who are, you know, very lit up as we all are awakening, and they're interested in doing things like that already. So, anything that has to do with that, I really am going to try to explain to people the first meetup what a starseed actually is by definition, because a lot of people don't clearly understand it and thus the purpose of a starseed. So I'll clarify that and give everybody extra information on that as well.
So it's for all levels of evolution, people that are just waking up, people that have been awake, people that are awake and functioning, all levels are welcome. Is this true?
Yes. All
Great.
Levels are welcome at this point, and we'll see the interest we've got and how we can best serve everybody by the level that they're awakened to and go from there. That seems to be what my gut is telling me is the best course of action.
Well, that's just wonderful, Georgia, and this has been something that you have been urged to do since returning from the Crystal Quest.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I get my marching orders from somewhere outside myself, and as Lavendar said, I just try to show up on time. And the Crystal Quest was absolutely amazing in October, and we all walked away with insights. It did something to collectively light us all up by our coding. And I think every one of us have had those light bulb moments in our own ways since then, and this was one of mine that's been pushing at me quite strongly.
Well, we're just glad that we know that you are on time, and you are certainly dedicated to supporting the Starseed family, and we sure appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much for everything everybody does. We couldn't do it without each other. So thank you very much, and thank you so much for allowing me to come on and make this little announcement.
Well, it was easy to do, and thank you so much, Georgia.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, Lavendar, are you ready to go with Astrology 102? I'm going to kick it off. I just want to make sure you're...
I'm here. Just go ahead and kick it off, and I'm here if you need to ask me anything about whatever it is you're talking about. Okay.
Okay. So as you know, I put a sample chart as a visual aid on our website. So if you want to, you need to open up a new browser window so that you can still hear the show, and go to starseedhotline.com/headline news. And there's a chart there run for the February 12th Astrology 101 show, but we can use that as just something to look at, because I think a lot of people can understand things more easily when it is visual. And I don't want to spend too much time recapping what we did in Astrology 101, save to say that we briefly just described each of the 12 houses and what area of activity they govern. And we also talked a little bit about the planets that rule each of the houses. And that's just kind of just real basic understanding. And this week I want to talk about the transits of planets through the houses. And if you'll notice if you are on the page that I just mentioned, beside the chart, there's a little legend that, it says Aries, and then there's a picture of a ram, and then there's the glyph, the symbol for Aries, which you can tell it kind of looks like a, ram horns, and then Mars is the planet that rules Aries, and then next to that, the little circle with the arrow on it, that is the glyph for Mars, and it would be a good idea to get familiar with those. And I'm going to leave this up here forever, so you can always have it to refer to. But on this sample chart, I ran it so that the houses are all in their natural position. And let me just back up a little bit. In a wheel, there's 360 degrees, and there are 12 houses, so each house has 30 degrees. And on a natural wheel, the first house is Aries. And you can see that if you look about 9 o'clock on the wheel, there's the glyph for Aries that is ruling the first house. So we're going to stick with the natural wheel because it can get way too complicated for Astrology 102 when we start having that wheel rotate, because truly any one of the 12 signs can be in that position. But Aries is the one that rules the first house. Now, when we say transiting planets, that is a planet in its current position, and it is in that position for the whole world. And right now, for example, Uranus is in Aries at 7 degrees of Aries. So that is a transiting planet and where it is right now. Uranus is in, is it at 7 Aries for the whole world. But what does that mean for you? So you will have to look at your own chart and see where, what sign, what, yeah, what house you have that is ruled by Aries, and that will show you where Uranus is in your chart. And the reason I'm starting with Uranus, even though it's, I will go back up and go in order, is because this is a major placement, because it is in Aries, and it was conjunct Mars the last week or so, and that really stirred up a lot of energy. It could have translated as irritability or getting upset or just all kinds of things. It can, on a global level, it can spark conflict between nations. But I'm getting ahead of myself here, so I want to just hope that everybody has their chart with it, that they could track these things. And you can also get, which I said this on Astrology 101, you can get a printout of your daily transits. And this is personal to you. It does not apply to anyone else unless they were born the same minute, the same day, the same town as you were. And if you would write this down, remember I asked you to have a pen and paper. Well, now's the time to get it out. There is a service that we have been using for 20 years or more, and it's called Astronumeric Service. And they have an 800 number where you can call and get your transits. And that number is 800-627-7464. And when you call them up, you give them your exact birth information, tell them you want the Koch house system, and that's spelled K-O-C-H, and they will send you a printout of day-to-day exactly what transits you're having. And in order to understand this, you'll need a reference book, and it is called Planets in Transit, written by Robert Hand, H-A-N-D. You can order this on Amazon or any other place, any place that sells books. It's a mainstream. It is the definitive work on transiting planets. And the reason this is so important is because it is like your personal weather forecast. It will give you windows of opportunity when, if you wanted to initiate something or launch a project, something that's important to you, and you want it to have the best possible outcome. So you should know what kind of planetary energies are at work. And it will give you the windows that, for example, well, this is not going to be a good time. The wind will be in your face. You'll be going uphill, and you're really going to have to work extra hard. But if you wait for this window, when this planet comes in, everything could go your way. So that's why understanding daily transits and planetary transits is so important. Otherwise, you're just out there blind, bumping around and hoping for the best. And this really puts you in the driver's seat to navigate and command your own ship. So, of the planets, I'm just going to quickly go through this because you can always replay it and write it down. But the planets really that I'm going to be focusing on are the larger planets, because they stay so long in the same house. For example, the moon is only 2.5 days in each sign. So it goes in a month. It goes around the whole wheel. So those are very very quick transits. And with the moon, it would be more benefit to understand how it is interacting with your other planets. Obviously, the sun spends 1 month in each sign. Mercury spends a week in each sign or house. And generally, a house is 30 degrees. And that can vary from chart to chart. Some people have wider houses or narrower houses, but we're kind of going with the average natural kind of chart. So the sun will set a month, Mercury a week, Venus will be 25 days in each house, Mars will be 40 days in each house, Jupiter would be a whole year in each house, Saturn would be 2.5 years, Uranus 7 years in each house, Neptune can be 13 to 14 years in each house. Pluto is an average of about 21 years, and it can go as much as 31. And the reason that I'm saying average is because planets do appear to us to be retrograde from time to time, and that would alter the length of time. So this is just a rule of thumb. Now, if you're not familiar with what a retrograde planet is, this is also important to understand, because if you would picture the planet Saturn in your head with the rings around it, and then think of Mercury sitting attached on the ring, and it's going around and around and around Saturn. Now, from our vantage point, and I'm only using Saturn as a visual, it doesn't actually happen like this. It's actually the sun, but the sun doesn't have the ring around it. It's just an orbit track. So when Mercury is going around and around, there is a time, if you think about it circling, when it starts to go around the back of the sun, it appears to be going backwards, but that's only from our vantage point. Of course, a planet never moves backwards in its orbit. It's always forward, but it's the way that it appears from the Earth. So that would lengthen a planet's stay in each house. So when I do transits for people during a reading, I pay attention to the larger transits because they have life-changing qualities as well as defining eras or chapters of your life. So the Lavendar, you want to explain the difference between personal planets and generational planets?
Well, yes, the generational planets are Pluto, Neptune, Uranus. Those and sometimes we consider Saturn, but I really just stay with the three, because they, wherever those planets are, they don't move very fast, and therefore a lot of people are born with those planets in one position and in the same sign. So, you know, thousands and thousands of people will be connected on a global frequency together. The personal planets are the ones that move, and you just named them, the ones that were, you know, fast moving. So basically, well, let's talk about Saturn for a moment. Saturn, you know, is in the sign of Scorpio now. And so Scorpio rules sex, death, regeneration. And so what we're seeing now is issues about homosexuality. We're seeing things happening with the Catholic Church, with the molestation of young boys. All kinds of things are happening. When Saturn gets into Scorpio, it digs up all the things that have been secrets for so long, or it changes a person's way of thinking about the sexual energy. You know, back in the 20th century, the first contact Saturn had in Scorpio came in December of 1923, and lasted until December of 26. And it was during those periods of time the hemline surged above the knee, more women entered college, a number of people of both genders were having premarital sex. So it's like when Saturn visits this sign, it always does something in these areas. Now, in October of 53 until October of 56, the birth of the birth control pill first went into the FDA testing. And then, of course, Playboy magazine was a very big hit. And then there was Marilyn Monroe, who was born with Saturn in Scorpio. So it's like, you just kind of look at some of these things that are happening and go, oh, yeah, that happened then. Well, what's happening now? And so we're having a lot of issues about sex with women in, say, Afghanistan and Iraq and the Middle East, and the freedom that women are wanting to have in these areas. So I just wanted to bring up that example about Saturn being in Scorpio at this time.
Okay. Well, if you know, for example, which house of your chart is ruled by Scorpio, it doesn't necessarily have to be the first house, but on a natural chart, it would be the eighth house. So if Saturn were in the eighth house, it would bring up similar type of issues in your own life. And when the planet Saturn, because it does spend a length of time in each house, it tends to go through and shake up things, as Lavendar said, that were buried, that were when it's in Scorpio. But also it shows you where the foundation of the structures in your life are a little shaky. Because Saturn is about structure. It's very strong. It is about propriety and doing things, you know, by the rules, by the book. And it helps us to build strong foundations from which to operate. So when you take a look at where Saturn is in your chart, it will show you the areas that need attention and you know, structural firming up. So next I want to move from Saturn to Jupiter. Jupiter spends about a year in each sign, and Jupiter is about opportunity. It's about upward movement. It's about it's unlimited. It is also about truth because it rules Sagittarius. But wherever Jupiter is in your chart is where there's room for expansion. And it's always, I kind of call it the have your dessert planet, because Jupiter brings a lot of expansion and freedom, where Saturn wants you to pay attention to details and make sure every little nut and bolt is in place and nice and tight. And without that Saturn building the foundation, then when Jupiter comes along with the sky's the limit, if you haven't laid the groundwork correctly, then that limits on how far Jupiter can take you. So when Jupiter is in the first house, for example, there is expansion on a personal level, because the first house is about how you see the world, how the world sees you, and it is a very expansive energy. It opens up your horizons, your possibilities, and you carry a bigger energy. Also, when Jupiter is in the first house, it can actually make you appear bigger to the world, and that can translate even to a physical level. So when Jupiter is in your first house, be careful with sweets and carbohydrates. Now, when Jupiter moves into the second house, this is about values and belief systems. And that almost always, unless you're really missing the boat, brings opportunities to increase your material possessions, your wealth, your prosperity. It gives you an opportunity to increase what you value, to your money, your resources. So it's very much about financial abundance if you know how to really take advantage of that opportunity. It could be sitting in that second house, and if you ignore it, then you've missed that, and it's going to take 12 years before you get another chance. Then when Jupiter moves into the third house is about communication. So there will be a lot of networking and communication with others and sharing of ideas. And there's also opportunities for writing, because that's a form of communication. When Jupiter goes into your fourth house, this is about your base of operations, your home and your family. It's also about your own past and records. So when Jupiter is in the fourth house, this is a great time to acquire real estate, to expand your base of operations, to find opportunities in anything that is around your home, your sacred space, your family. Then when Jupiter moves into your fifth house, the fifth house is about creativity, things that you put your name on. And this includes children or works of art, entertainment, amusement, any of the arts. And the fifth house is also about gambling. So when Jupiter is in your fifth house, if you have other aspects to the fifth house, you may find it seems like good luck drops out of the sky, especially if you were to buy a lottery ticket. But mostly it is about this expansion of and opportunities in areas of creativity. When it's in the sixth house is about your daily routine and your health. So when Jupiter's in the sixth house, you generally would enjoy a robust level of health. And there can also be expansion on a physical level. So again, be careful with sweets and carbohydrates during that time. But it also allows you to do a lot more productive to work that will yield positive results when it's in your sixth house. Then when Jupiter goes into the seventh house, this is about your relationships, your one-on-one relationships. And this can be your family, your friends. It can be teachers and students, doctors and patients. It can be your romantic partner. But Jupiter is very good for expanding relationships, for taking them to higher levels. And it's just a very good opportunity to maybe do a little cleanup and improvement on your one-on-one relationships. And then when Jupiter goes into the eighth house, which Lavendar was talking about, the eighth house is about sex, death, regeneration, resurrection, and all of those key words indicate a change, a transformation, a transmutation, that quickening moment when something is lifeless and then it becomes alive, or vice versa. It can be life and death of situations. It is not necessarily literally about life and death, but it can be. And when Jupiter is in the eighth house, it will expand your quest for understanding the deeper mysteries, and also it is very good for joining forces in ventures with people where other people's money is concerned. Anything you want to add to that, Lavendar, for Jupiter in the eighth house?
Well, it's kind of like a smorgasbord. It's like it's the everything planet, and especially when it's in the eighth, it connects you with opportunities with other people's money and investments, or sometimes it just will fall out of the sky through a will or probate or a long-lost relative will leave you a lot of money. It's a very expansive place. But I look at Jupiter as wherever it shows up, that's the smorgasbord. That's where you sit back and go, oh, I've got lots of choices. Let's make it a wise one.
Right, right. And then when Jupiter goes into the ninth house, it is in its own home. Jupiter rules Sagittarius, and Sagittarius rules the ninth house. And the ninth house is about higher truth, greater freedom, ultimate justice, spirituality, philosophy, the higher mind, It's about long-distance travel. It is the philosopher, the seeker, the thinker. And when Jupiter is in its own home, it is in a more exalted state. And this will be when you are seeking higher knowledge and wanting to learn more about the mysteries of life and the higher levels of spirituality. And also when Jupiter is in the ninth house, it accents your desire for freedom and your ability to perceive the truth. Then when Jupiter goes into the 10th house, the 10th house is about your career, your profession, the things you do in the public, which may or may not be what you do for a paycheck, but it is also about public things. So when Jupiter is in the 10th house, it's a great time to maybe launch a new business, to start a new work of some kind that will be satisfying to you on a spiritual, philosophical level. And it is a good time, opportunities for advancement in your job, whatever that may be. Then when Jupiter goes into the 11th house, the 11th house is about also concepts of freedom, humanity, your hopes, your wishes, your dreams. And because Jupiter does have this quality concerned with freedom, when it gets into the 11th house, which is the house where it does not like restriction of any kind, the 11th house is the Aquarian Uranian house. So when Jupiter and the 11th house get together, there is breaking free of limiting anything, whether it's situations, ideas, people, anything. It's about breaking free. And then when Jupiter goes into the 12th house, it is more expansion of the mystical, the metaphysical, the spiritual, the visionary, the desire to be of service to groups of people and organizations, charitable organizations. It is the 12th house is the house that is more selfless, and then Jupiter has completed a cycle, and that takes generally about 12 years. However, when a planet goes retrograde, meaning that it appears to go backwards, it can take longer. So it's good to know when these windows happen. Now, we can do the same thing with Uranus. Uranus spends about 7 years in each house, in each sign. And for most people, it's about 30 degrees on your wheel. And as I said, Uranus is a planet that hates restriction, can cause, you know, rebellion against restriction. And this is really the planet that just comes out of nowhere. It's like lightning. And actually, when you think of all the planets in our solar system, they all rotate on a north-south axis, except for Uranus. It rotates on an east-west axis. So while all the other planets are spinning upright, Uranus is spinning laid over. So therefore, it's different. People that have a lot of Uranian energy, which it rules Aquarius, are very quirky. They're called the soloists of the galaxy, of the universe, because Aquarians, there's no two alike. They're different. They might be offbeat. They might be kind of bohemian, the beatnik kind of person. But it is a person who marches to the beat of their own drum, and personal freedom is very important. Also, Uranus, because it rules Aquarius, is about brotherly and sisterly love, because Aquarius is about humanitarianism. So if Uranus were in your first house, it usually causes rapid change, sudden change, unpredictable change, and it's neither good nor bad in itself. It can be upsetting if you are really attached to the status quo, or it can be totally liberating. But the bottom line is that Uranus is like lightning, and it comes out of the blue, and it's gone, that energy. So, Lavendar, how would you interpret Uranus in the first house? How would that affect a person?
Well, let me just first say that, you know, you've heard that saying, the seven-year itch.
Oh, yeah?
It kind of comes from Uranus. Because a lot of people will stay married for 7 years, and when Uranus changes houses in their charts, that's when they say, you know what, enough of this. I want to go do something else now. So that's where, you know, seven-year itch is kind of a Uranian aspect. But when, you know, when Uranus crosses the ascendant, that's when your finger's in the electrical socket and your hair's standing straight out, and you're making big changes in your life, okay? And I've had a lot of clients lately that have had Uranus crossing their ascendant. And one of the reasons that they call for sessions is they feel it coming. They don't know what it is, but they can feel a big change is happening. But Uranus in the first, it takes about 7 years to really get through it. And after you get through it, then you think, wow, you know, what I was thinking 7 years ago, I'm not even thinking that now. And then when it goes into the second house, then it will go into values and money and resources. And then you'll go through ups and downs with your finances or windfalls or unexpected things will happen with your money.
Like easy come, easy go.
Yeah, easy come, easy go. And then when it hits the third house, it ignites the brain and just plugs it up with a big light bulb that'll stay there for like 7 years, and you'll drive everybody crazy with phone calls and emails, and you'll be an information junkie beyond yourself.
Huh.
For about 7 years. And then when it goes into your fourth house, oh goodness, you could move several times, or you could be living in a place that keeps having floods or disasters or something that just, you know, keeps happening over and over and over again for about 7 years. Then when it goes in the fifth house, it'll really create some interesting sparks for creation. A lot of people get pregnant with Uranus in the fifth. Other people will, depending on their vocation, will simply have a genius idea or of some kind. They'll want to invent something, a lot of patents. When you look at astrology charts of people that file patents, most of them have Uranus in the fifth house. So, yeah, and then Uranus in the sixth, your health can go through some drastic changes, and your daily work. So that's what I'd say. Go ahead and take it with Uranus in the seventh.
Well, Uranus in the seventh, and we're talking about transiting, because the seventh house is about your one-on-one relationships. And if you have a very stable relationship with someone, whether it's your loved one, your direct family, or just friends and associates and acquaintances, the stable relationships will not be affected that much by Uranus, but there may be some upgrades or some tweaking or some improvements, places where you take care of that little thing that was kind of bothersome. But if a relationship was not built on solid ground, it normally would not survive Uranus transiting that seventh house, because anything that does not serve you, and this really goes for all of the planets, if you have attached yourself to something that is detrimental, whether it's a situation, a thought form, a belief, a person, anything that is holding you back, when a planet comes through in whatever area it might take effect in, it serves to clean house for you. And the more you are clinging to this bad habit, the more disruptive the transit would be. And when we're talking about Uranus, it really doesn't take any prisoners. But things that do serve you, things that are beneficial, things that empower you and lift you up, Uranus won't touch them. It's the things that are restrictive. Because remember, I said Uranus hates restriction. It's about rebellion against restriction. It's about liberation. So things that you've been biting your tongue about, things that you had stuffed in the closet, things that you swept under the rug, little things in a relationship that you never really voiced, that this is really bugging me. When Uranus goes through your seventh house, it is time really to clean it all out. And so by the same token, if a relationship were to start with Uranian energy, it might be like fireworks, stellar, the electricity, oh my gosh. But remember, just like we said in the second house where your money's concerned, it could be easy come, easy go. And then when Uranus gets out of the seventh house, that relationship is like, wow, what was I thinking? But then when Uranus moves into the eighth house, it can really, it'll do the same thing in the areas of sex, death, regeneration, things that you have, your deepest secrets. Anything that doesn't serve you, it will bring it up in some kind of eruption, so you'll have a chance to deal with it. And you cannot resist these large planetary energies. It's bigger than you. So understand that it is always going to carry you to a higher, better, more powerful position. But you have to be willing to understand the energies and to take a very honest look at your situation. By the same token, if Uranus is in your eighth house, you might... What do you think about this, Lavendar? Have the best sex ever, but don't expect it to last?
Or trying kinky sex would be one of them, too. Things you'd never thought of doing before, like, getting the Kama Sutra book out or something.
Yeah. Well, that's, that never crossed my mind, because I'm really kind of like the Mary Tyler Moore of the of that world.
I got Moon in Scorpio, so I can say it.
You can say it. That's right. So then when Uranus goes into your ninth house, it will really bring up any issues around lack of liberty, lack of freedom, the need for freedom and liberty and justice, as well as sudden realizations or understandings about those spiritual matters. And I hope you're remembering my descriptions of the various houses. Uranus in the ninth house, Lavendar, anything to add?
Yeah, if it's natally, if you're born with Uranus in the ninth, it gives you a strong leaning toward astrology. I find a lot of people that have Uranus in the ninth are really good astrologers.
Right, and these energies that we're describing, I've been talking about transiting planets as these planets go through, but it also applies on the natal chart because these planets were in that house when you were born. So that's almost, it's a stamp on your blood crystals, so that would be the energy that was kind of locked into that house when you were born. And then when Uranus gets into the 10th house, you may very easily change careers, professions, at least employers, because if you are in a job situation, a work situation that is unfulfilling, unrewarding, limiting, you feel oppressed, unappreciated, all of those things. When Uranus comes into your 10th house, man, you are out of there. That's it. You know, you hit the wall and I can't take this anymore. And you could just snap and go find something that is going to support your growth and your feelings of fulfillment. And if you try to hang on to that job because the paycheck is good and you're scared to step out of that, for 7 years, I mean, it'll just keep beating you up until you finally surrender and say, okay, I will get out of here. So that's why it's so important that you have an honest look at things to see where you are restricted, where you're being held down or held back, because when Uranus comes into that area, it's going to rip it out by the roots. And if you're trying to hang on, it'll be more painful than if you just let it go and defer to that energy and know that it's going to take you to a better place, even if it can be a little intimidating or you know, scare you a little bit because you don't know what's coming. But you would get to a point where you can't take it anymore anyway. When Uranus is in the 11th house, it is at home, and those issues of freedom, brotherhood, sisterhood, thinking on a global level, seeing things in their ultimate ideal state, where your hopes and your wishes and dreams are concerned, and things, unexpected things could happen because this is its own house. Uranus rules Aquarius, therefore it rules Aquarians. And anything you want to add to Uranus in the 11th house, Lavendar?
I notice a lot of people are getting activated with soul groups during that period of time because it seems to open up their soul records with other commitments and contracts that they might have made from other lifetimes. So those people that you live, loved, and died with may be showing up.
Well, that is the brotherhood and sisterhood covering eons, a lifetime after lifetime. And then when Uranus goes into the 12th house, it's really going to clean out the closet, the basement, the attic, everything, things that you have hidden from yourself, because the 12th house is things that are hidden. And that doesn't necessarily mean bad things, because it's about privacy. It's your own space and your dreams, literally your dreams, visions, psychic ability, mysticism, ancient wisdom, ancient secrets. Those are all things that are hidden from the outer world. But it's also where people will bury things that they never dealt with. And when Uranus comes through your 12th house, well, it's time to deal with them. And if you really do some soul searching, some self-analysis, you can make it be easier on yourself. Otherwise, any unfinished business that you kind of had thrown up in the attic, it's going to fall down on your head, and maybe not at a very opportune time. So it's always a good idea to spend time in contemplation and really soul searching for, you know, the truth about something that you've done in the past that you never dealt with, or issues that maybe happened to you that went unnoticed or unconfessed, as in abuses that were perpetrated on you. And those issues are going to come up so that you have a chance for closure with them. And I know Uranus in the 12th house can really stir up a lot. Lavendar, you want to add to any of that?
Well, it also will open up the starseed gates of understanding, and you'll go, wow, I just, you know, I had a cosmic V8 moment. Sudden things will flash in your mind, and your brain just kind of gets activated in way out there, you know, where you're thinking about parallel universes and time travel, and boy, you're hooked up to Star Trek, you know, and everything that has to do with extraterrestrials. It really brings it front and center. It will just blow it wide open.
And those are issues and topics that are hidden either in your own subconscious or in your soul records. So there's a lot of activation that can happen. And I would like to just stress that every planetary transit and aspect that you would have gives you an opportunity to grow, to learn, to advance, and the degree of unpleasantness is directly proportionate to the degree of your willingness to go with it. Like I said, the more you hang on to something that's not good for you, the more difficult any transit is going to be, because it's giving you an opportunity. And if you don't deal with it, if you somehow get through that transit and never look at that thing, when it comes back around again, it's going to be bigger and harder because it's had more time to fester, so to speak. So I want to talk about Mars, even though it is a pretty fast-moving planet, because it does have a lot of influence. Mars is a planet of energy and fire. It is initiative, it courage, leadership. It is all those qualities of Aries, and it has to do with competition. And it can also make you combative, because Mars obviously was the god of war. And it's good to track where Mars is in your planet, because that's where the energy, very strong energy, is there. It's available to use. And if you use it in the way that it wants to express itself, you can get more work done. You can do way more things. You can accomplish more. But if you do not have a chance to express that energy, it can turn inward, like any planet in any transit. When it's wanting you to express an energy, if you don't do it, if you don't go forward with that, you might, let's say if Mars is bringing up issues that make you irritable, but you don't want to be irritable, so you bite your tongue, it can go out and come back as a mirror where everybody else around you is irritable. So it's a good way to use Mars energy if you have to be dedicated to a particular task that's kind of tedious. Mars doesn't like that. So that would be a good time to become like physically active, you know, go run around the block or do something to get rid of that energy. Because if you do not express Mars energy, like if you don't express Uranian energy, it can have a kind of a ricochet boomerang effect. So physical activity is always a good way to kind of take the release the pressure valve. So I want to check the time here and make sure. Okay, yeah, we have some time. So
just let me say something about Mars. And this Uranus-Mars conjunct in Aries, in fire, you know, I play on the weekends. I get on my computer and I look at all the racetracks, the horse racetracks. And there was a horse called God of War. and his odds were, you know, pretty good. And so I thought, Uranus-Mars conjunct in Aries, I'm going to bet that horse. And it won. And it won.
Wow.
The win. It's like sometimes, you know, when you have something that blatant just right in your face, you know, and if you're a gambler like I am, you just go for it.
Well, when you think about how I described Uranus, it is like lightning energy. It's sporadic, it's spastic, you never know when it's coming. So that's, and it's in that it's like lightning, where Mars is more like a burning fire, and it's a little bit more stable than Uranus, but still it's still like a burning fire, and Mars and Uranus blended together in the sky, and Mars is now passed over there, but we're probably still feeling a little bit of the echoes of that. So when you know that this is happening, you can look in your own chart and see where you need to have your eyes wide open. And the on a global level, Mars and Uranus can spark wars, because it's the fire and the electricity where tempers flare and you know, someone throws a match into the gas tank and it can just go unbridled like that. But even on a more symbolic level in your own life, think about the last couple of weeks. Have you been feeling that either restlessness or irritability or frustration, you know, short-tempered? And the great thing about understanding astrology is that, number one, you can navigate your own daily and monthly and long-term activities, but it helps you to understand, why am I feeling so irritable? Why am I so cranky? And when you say, well, it's just Mars transiting one of my natal planets, then you could say, okay, yeah, it'll be over in 2 or 3 days, and that's that. And other planets as well, that especially like Saturn, which can make you, you know, get in there and clean up that room. You know you should. You know it's good for you, but sometimes you just you have to bow to the planetary energies. And as I said, if you don't, then when they come back around, the ticket's going to be twice as expensive. So I'm debating, Lavender. Should I talk about aspects, or should we just continue with transits?
I think we should continue with transits.
Okay. So the smaller planets that we call the personal planets, because they move so quickly, they have a bigger influence on your day-to-day running and working, whereas as we were talking about the larger planets being more establishing eras and chapters of your life. But the smaller planets, like Mercury and Venus, and Mars are considered personal planets as well as Jupiter, but they come and go, these transits come and go so quickly. You know, Mercury is only 1 week in each house. So this Mercury rules the mind, so your thought processes, your brain computer, communication, information. You think about Mercury, the god Mercury was the winged messenger. And so this will be a good time for communicating with people, for doing, you know, informational type research, sharing your information, contacting people that you haven't talked to in a while. And, you know, and then after the week, it's out of that particular house. So you may have a more fleeting experience with Mercury. And Mercury generally, I can't think of much of a scenario where it can cause many problems, because it's so quick moving. And
it can cause problems if you've got, say, a Pluto Mars Mercury conjunct crossing the ascendant. You certainly wouldn't want to, you know, take a long distance trip or start a fight with anybody.
Right.
And don't forget about the moon.
I'll be getting to that.
Okay.
But Mercury could mess with your thought processes. and make your judgment unreliable if it were badly aspected. And we're not going to talk about aspects today. I think that would be more Astrology 103. And then, of course, Venus. Venus is a planet that is mostly about good times, self-indulgence. I call it, the peel me a grape. You know, you imagine the goddess Venus, and she's just lying back, and everybody brings everything to her, and they peel her grapes for her. Venus is about beauty. It's about good social times. It's a great time for entertaining. And as Venus moves through each of the houses, it puts that focus for, you know, 3.5 weeks anyway on, in the first house, it would be a more attractive outward appearance possibly, or seeing the world, seeing more beauty in the world. In the second house, which Venus rules, it is a good time for attracting things, especially on a material basis, your personal resources, your possessions, and also it's about values and belief systems. And then in the third house, it would be very fun, enjoyable communications. And in the fourth house, you might want to beautify your home and your base of operations. In the fifth house, it is really all about recreation, good times, entertainment. Then it moves into the sixth house, and you might want to, you know, do something to beautify or improve the your body or your daily, making your daily work more attractive to you in some way. When it's in the seventh house, it's very much about loving relationships. In the eighth house, again, Venus in the eighth house, it is all dressed up and looking for trouble. Would you say, Lavendar?
Yeah, that's it.
All dressed up and looking for trouble. In the ninth house, Venus in the ninth house. Tell me, Lavendar, give me your hit on that.
Well, it's where you want to go pick up travel brochures and get on airplanes and travel, and you'll go to the library and start, you know, looking up distant countries, or you want to know about foreigners, and you're activated into adventure. It's about adventure. Venus in the ninth, all about adventure.
Okay, and then Venus in the tenth.
Well, that'd be focus on the beautification of where you're working, or dealing with women where you work, or the female aspect is standing up a little stronger, a little, you know, if you're in an office full of men and Venus is in your 10th house, they start looking at you differently.
Mm-hmm.
It's a focus point.
Right. Yeah. So you're getting the theme here that Venus is obviously it's about women, and it is about attraction, and as well as physical appearance, and it's always about beauty. So when Venus goes into the 11th house, Lavendar?
Well, that would be the activation of the soul groups that I was referring to a while ago. I really look now for the 11th house to, it goes further than the planet Earth. It reaches out into the universe and other planets and other species, and the galactic happenings are starting to happen with soul groups and bringing people together through synchronization. So when Venus gets there, all of a sudden maybe you'll want to join a woman's group, or you want to take a trip and meet people you haven't seen for a long time. It really is into that activation of soul group activity, the gathering, I call it, the gathering.
Ah. And then when Venus goes into the 12th house, there's going to be some similar activities there as well because of the soul records that are kept in the 12th house.
You know, that's kind of tricky because I've seen when Venus goes into the 12th, sometimes you'll hear about somebody that's been hospitalized or go to prison, or you'll find you'll see when if it's a Venus in the 12th, it has to do with our United States chart. there'll just be all kinds of activities happening with women, but it doesn't really surface until Venus crosses the ascendant of our nation's chart. And then the women just start, you know, they start flooding the telephones and they start marching and they want their rights.
Okay. So and next I'm going to talk about the moon. And obviously the moon goes through every sign every month. And the most important thing to, I think, the most useful thing in tracking the moon is what sign is the moon in and what sign and how does that express itself through that sign. Because the moon is about your emotions. It is also about your relationships with women. And because the moon is the ruler of Cancer, it also has to do with women in your life, like your mother, your grandmother, and things from the past, women from the past. And if anyone that's listening works with the public, you can almost see the patterns. And just as a course of study, you can notice the overall tone. You know, when the moon is in Aries, people might be a little bit more competitive. When the moon is in Taurus, they're more concerned about beautiful things, but the material things. And when the moon is in the third house, it's about communication, which would be Gemini, then more talkative. When the moon is in Cancer, which is its home, people can get a little moody, and it would also strengthen your own intuition. When the moon is in the fifth house, which is on a natural chart now, it's ruled by Leo. So when the moon is in Leo, people are very, very gregarious. They're more generous. They're more on stage. The fifth house rules acting, and so the moon in Leo is a very magnanimous, generous, outgoing, let's go have some fun, because the fifth house is about fun. And then when it's in the sixth house, it's more about paying attention to details and critical. I mean, the sixth house is ruled by Virgo, and it is very meticulous. It seeks perfection. It wants everything organized, and it's about physical health as well as service. But it's very, very meticulous. So when the moon is in Virgo, people will have more of a critical eye. They will catch the little mistakes. So when the moon moves into the seventh house, which is ruled by Libra, that is really good for one-on-one relationships. And you'll feel more loving. Relationships with women would be a focal point. Whether they're good or bad depends on all other factors. When the moon is in the eighth house, again, all dressed up and kind of looking for trouble, the eighth house is also, it makes people ask, it makes them curious. They want to know more. They want to investigate. Well, what's the meaning under the meaning? And keep in mind that because the moon does rule your emotions, this really comes at a very basic level, because we are a planet ruled by emotion. In the ninth house, it's going to turn to those higher mind things, the philosophy, the long-distance travel, the seeking of truth and freedom and justice. And in the tenth house, again, that would be moon in Capricorn. People are very practical. It's very duty, responsibility-oriented. It is about being able to use resources wherever you may find them, and there's a really good aspect to Capricorn in being able to make something out of nothing. You know, it's like MacGyver, you know. You can take this over here and that over here and this over here, and wow, look what we came up with just by what you had available that was useful to you at the moment. So Moon in Capricorn is about duty and responsibility, but Capricorn is also a very serious sign, and it can make people kind of cool off and get serious. It's not so much about fun and good times like it would be in Leo. When the moon is in Aquarius, this is about freedom and your hopes and your wishes and dreams. It's about humanitarianism, and every stranger is just a friend you haven't met yet. Aquarians are friends to everyone. And when the moon is in Aquarius, you'll notice that people are much more a humanitarian. And then when the moon goes into the 12th house, it is a time for introspection, and makes you want to really be of service to other people, even to the point when the moon is in Pisces, people might want to go save somebody or sacrifice themselves for the betterment of someone else. Moon in Pisces can tend to kind of look at everything that's wrong and maybe not everything that's right. But it can also, Moon in Pisces is like the Mother Teresa, you know. So, and every sign really has different octaves. If you're familiar with music or piano, there are several C's on the piano. There's middle C and then high C and then low C. And the signs are kind of like that because every sign is has a very high expression, like, you know, the college level expression, if you want to think of evolution in that way, or the more kindergarten, the lower frequencies, the bass notes. And so it just depends on the level of evolution of the person, and this really goes for every planet and every sign, as to how it expresses itself and how you can, you know, stay in the higher octaves. But excuse me, and tracking the moon, when the moon is what they call void of course, when it is not making an aspect to any other planet, and it usually does that towards the end of the 2.5-day cycle through a sign, when the moon is void of course, this is not a good time to start something new or to do something where you really care about the outcome. The only thing I read one time, Lavendar, and maybe you could give me your take on this, is that if you want to do something where you don't want anything to happen, that would be when moon void, of course, would be helpful.
Yeah, that's about right.
Like if you were going to go, you know, talk to an estranged person and you didn't want anything, you know, you just didn't want any kind of event to happen, moon void, of course, might be a good time because there's not any spark in the tinderbox.
Yeah, that's right.
But apart from those singular kind of rare occasions, moon void, of course, is just a time where you wait, think about what you're going to do, but don't move until it goes direct, until it goes into the next sign. And there are places on the internet where you can track this stuff for free. I found a site that I really like. It's called zodiacarts.com, and it's strictly for tracking the moon. There's also a little it's a little booklet that you can get called the Pocket Astrologer that you can carry with you if you're not sitting in front of a computer all the time or have access. And that is Lavendar, I know you get that at Astronomeric as well.
It's Jim Maynard's.
Jim Maynard, that's right.
Yeah, Jim Maynard's Pocket Astrologer. And also, they have a big calendar you can hang, you know, in your office where you can see it. But I like the Pocket Astrologer because I fill it in my purse and it helps me to time things.
Right, and that is really the bottom line for understanding astrology, for timing things, and having the greatest understanding, not only of yourself, but of the people in your life, as well as situations. But timing is everything. Certainly, you know, I keep using the analogy with weather, but you would not go out in a sailboat without checking the weather forecast. And if you go out, you know, looking for a new job, looking for a new house, you know, looking for love, whatever you're going out to try to manifest, if you don't know which way the wind is blowing, you are really taking an unnecessary gamble. So it's very important to understand what astrological influences are operating in your life if you're going to be doing something that matters to you. You know, if you're just sitting home watching TV, I guess it doesn't matter much unless you're having a lot of Mars energy. Then, you know, and you're just sitting there watching TV, you may find other people yelling at you because you're not expressing the energy. So I would like to tell you right now, if you're on the switchboard, if you have a question about anything that I've been talking about, we don't really want to talk about personal, you know, charts and transits and things, but if you have any kind of astrological question in general, think about that. Press 1 in your keypad, and we'll have Chris and Fiona talk to you and find out what your question is, and I'll just continue here while you are doing that. So now I want to talk about the last two planets, Neptune and Pluto. And since they are in each sign for an average, like Neptune 13 to 14 years, could be longer if it goes retrograde, and Pluto can be anywhere from 13 to 31 years in the same sign. We don't really need to go through all of those house by house like we did with the other ones. But wherever Pluto is in your chart, Lavendar, would you... Right now, Pluto is... where is Pluto right now?
Pluto is at 10 Capricorn. So
okay.
What we're seeing with Pluto and Capricorn is it's shaking up corporate America. It's shaping up the foundations of religious rhetoric. It's when Pluto was in Sagittarius, it was in a freedom. Everybody, it was in a freedom place. Now it's into structure and what was ever built in the last 30 years. Well, now they're taking a second look at, well, maybe we shouldn't have done it that way. When you look at the global aspects of Pluto being in Capricorn, it's very restrictive. A lot of these countries are voting for austerity. It makes people want to tighten their belt a little tighter. Although what Pluto does is it kind of blows up the belt, you know. It's in Capricorn, so they're thinking, oh, we've got to cut back, and at the same time it's blowing up their whole system. So by being there for, you know, the next 30 years, it's like we've really got a ways to go with Pluto being in Capricorn. It's going to rearrange the way we think about limitations, restrictions, foundations, the building of things. You know,
but
Uranus, when it goes through a sign, it... It's like lightning. It strikes in unexpected ways. With Pluto, it just sits there and blows things up. It's like the atomic bomb. We look at Pluto as the atomic bomb that happens to a chart. It's like whatever is not working in your life, Pluto will come along and blow it up.
Right. So, I mean, and like I said before, this is all for ultimate change for the better. And Pluto is the transformer, and you think about it, you know, Capricorn, it rules the 10th house, so that is about business, and it's about duty and responsibilities as well, but when Pluto comes, I mean, being in Capricorn, any structure that was built substandard you know, using faulty materials, using erroneous beliefs or any, you know, lies and deceptions, any structure, and I'm not limiting this to an actual building, but a structure is, a way or a system of doing something. If that was not built on solid thinking, those are the ones that Pluto is going to come in and just blow it up.
Well, but here's an example. In Cyprus, when Uranus and Mars were conjunct and Pluto was in Capricorn squaring that whole thing, the government decided that they'd go into people's bank accounts and take 10% of their money out of their savings and their checking accounts and donate the money to the government to pay off a debt. So people went crazy. They went to the ATM machines to start pulling out their money, and pretty soon the ATMs were not functioning, and it's caused a major hoo-ha in Cyprus, Greece. But by looking at the Pluto, Mars, Uranus, it's like, okay, that kind of speaks for what's happening over there. But it could be happening anywhere, actually.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, you would agree that if structures are sound, built on good premises and good building materials, so to speak, Pluto doesn't really want to blow those things up because they're working.
Well, true. It blows up things that aren't working.
That's right. So the good news is that this Pluto being in Capricorn is going to make everything right. Anything that's not right, that's not working, that was built on lies and deceptions, sorry, Pluto's taking you out. And what will be left will be the cream of the crop, the things that are sound, the things that are working. And it's just like, throwing out all the clothes that you have that are ugly anymore, so you just like get rid of those and just keep your favorite stuff.
The other thing about Pluto is wherever Pluto is in your natal chart shows where your power is and how to use power. Either you're wise or unwise about how you use your personal power that comes from your chart.
Mm-hmm. And then wherever the transiting Pluto is in your chart is showing the areas of your life that are being transformed. And, again, if things are changing, it's because they need to change. And if they're not changing, it's because they're fine the way they are. So we have a question here on our switchboard, and then we're going to talk about Neptune just briefly. So first of all, I'm going to pick up and say hello to Joseph. Hello.
Hello, ladies. I've always wanted to know, what is the significance of the North Node and the South Node in a chart?
Lavendar?
Well, the North Node shows the mission that you came, things, the destiny. I look at it as destiny, what you agreed to do when you came to the planet. The South Node shows where you've come from with your attributes and your masterships to go forward with your destiny. So the house sign and the zodiac sign, there's a combination of those two things that start working together when I look at a chart to talk about a person's destiny and what they agreed to do when they came here.
Wow, thank you, Lavendar. That explains so much to me. My North Node and my Moon are almost conjunct on the cusp of Scorpio and, what am I trying to say, the one right after Scorpio?
Sagittarius.
Yes, that. The Moon and the North Node are conjunct on that, and you told me that also in my chart. That's the Pleiadian lineup or something, isn't it?
Well, is it 25, 26, 27 degrees of Scorpio?
It's the very tail end of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Pleiadian. It's about you coming. Your mission here is probably Pleiadian. It has to do with ancient secrets, telling people the truth, and being able to your ships from other lifetimes, taken people through the aspects of the creative spin, whatever the creative spin is for you, whether it's singing or drama or having memories of past lives or whatever.
Yeah, all of the above. And you told me I came here with the Athena group. So, I mean, it's just, boy.
It all makes sense, doesn't it? It all makes sense.
It makes total sense. And I'm just sitting here shaking all over wondering, what the heck is next? Because it's right on top of me. I don't know what it is, but.
Well, as we've been saying, it's all for the good. It is all for the good.
That's
and,
the one thing I'm sure of, Arielle. Listen, thank you all so much. It's been a great show. I'm just about to run out the door to hear Julie Lohr's full moon meditation for tonight, so I'll tell you all said hello.
Okay, you do that. Thanks so much for calling, Joseph.
Oh, yeah, thank you all. And, Levendar, we need to have a long talk sometimes.
Okay, well, send me an email and tell me what's a good time to call you and send your phone number.
Okay, sweetheart. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye, Joseph.
Bye.
So I just want to wrap it up here real quickly by talking about Neptune, and that way we will have covered all the planets. So Neptune is the ruler of Pisces, therefore the 12th house. It has to do with spirituality, with service, as well as dreams, visions, all those qualities of the 12th house that has to do with, it can be visions or illusions or even go into delusions, because it's, like I said, there's a high frequency and a low frequency. So the same key that has the highest of visionary psychic ability can also become a little fuzzy and foggy as it goes into the lower octaves, where Neptune can actually go into delusion, and that can actually go into deception. So, Lavendar, would you just give us a little bit about Neptune?
Well, you know, Neptune really rules the pineal gland, and so that opens you up for the expressions of out there, you know, from the other where and spiritual advancement and being able to meditate. And it also rules drugs and alcohol. So if you're on the down spiral and, you know, and you're just, you know, spinning out and not being creative or active, and you're just staying home, staying drunk or on drugs all the time, is, you know, and Neptune is badly aspected in your chart, then it will show. And sometimes when you see like a Mars-Neptune conjunct, that will give you the tendency to, you know, to have addictions.
To lie to yourself about it.
And to lie to yourself about it, right. Or you'll be, you know, when Mars-Neptune happen, when Mars transits Neptune, you have to watch out for other people lying to you, too. So, and that's a short-lived transit. It will only last, you know, for a little while, but it can. So when you see that happening, you'll see like the beer company from Germany bought, you know, what was it?
Budweiser.
Budweiser. It was when Mars could jump Neptune. Yeah, I had to laugh about that.
So obviously, if you were arranging a business deal with people that you're not very familiar with, you're going to want to check and make sure that you're not having a Mars-Neptune transit, because that would increase the likelihood that you're being deceived in some way. And but it is, as Lavendar said, it is about spirituality, and it does take you to the heights, and conversely can take you to the depths, because Neptune, you think about the water. And have you ever, you know, walked along the shore and you see a seashell under the water and you think, oh, it's so beautiful. And then you pick it up out of the water and you think, well, it looked better under the water. It's not what you thought it was. So
it's a jellyfish and it stings you.
Right. So there is you have to be very discerning, because Neptune can take you to, you know, the heights of, you know, galactic visions and interaction and your pineal gland. But it, like I said, it has a high side and a low side, like every planet does. So this is why it's so important to track your daily transits and understand the energies that these big planets will exert on eras of your life, as well as the fast-moving planets can open up short little windows for maybe less consequential activities. Some transits are very, very benign, and the worst that can happen is that you buy a pair of shoes that you really didn't need. But if you would remember to get that daily transit book and The Planets in Transit by Robert Hand, and your 12 months of daily transits from Astronumeric Service. And you probably would want to call them, because I understand that their website has so many buttons where you can push, you might not be getting exactly what you need. So if you just call them up, give them your birth information, tell them you want the Koch House System, which is spelled K-O-C-H, and they will send you the printout book. It's about $22 for a whole year's worth of information. It will tell you exactly when the transit is beginning, when it peaks, and when it's gone. And then you look in the reference book to see how that translates in your life. And over time, just by doing this, you don't have to know anything about astrology. Just by doing this over time, you will just kind of passively absorb astrological understanding. So that will conclude our Astrology 102 program. And make sure you listen to Astrology 101 first. And we will have more programs like this as we go. And I want to thank everyone for listening. Lavendar and Anastasia, thank you so much for your input here. And Chris and Fiona, thank you for your work on the switchboard. We really appreciate that. And we want to invite you to come back next week at same time, same place. And also, I guess I would just mention that we have, I think we only have one spot left on our Quest trip. So if you are interested in that, please send us an email to crystals@starseedhotline.com. So, Lavendar, anything you want to add before I say good night for all of us?
No, I just I'm just very excited about the Crystal Quest and what's going to be happening for us in Arkansas. And if you're thinking about maybe taking a trip with us, now's the time to go, because we're going to have some outstanding activities taking place with us because of who we are and the timing of things that will be happening on the planet in a global fashion. So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, on behalf of everyone here at Starseed Radio Academy, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.